Martin Davidson grew up in Scotland. When he was a kid, his German grandfather used to visit now and again. He'd regale Martin with stories of life in Germany and his career as a dentist. But as Martin Davidson grew older, he started to notice a darker side to his grandfather, particularly one night over brandy and cigars.
He would take a large and deliberate puff and lean over. "Martin," he would mutter, the clipped German pronunciation of my name, promising an instant semi-conspiratorial intimacy, and then it would start. Some of his taunts were historical ones. "You know, all we wanted was an empire too, like your Churchill's." Other allusions he made were far more opaque. He gave me a recording of Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsodies. He loved Hungarian culture, he told me, thought it was wonderful, his favourite. Only later did I start thinking, "And when the hell were you ever in Hungary?"
After the old man died, Martin Davidson learned the truth. His grandfather, Bruno Langpin, had been a member of the Nazi Party, and not just a garden variety member. Langpin was a member of the SS and the recipient of the Gold Honor Party Badge, a medal given to those who joined the Nazi Party long before they came to power. Davidson writes about his discovery in a new book. It's called The Perfect Nazi, Uncovering My Grandfather's Secret Past. And Martin Davidson joins me now from London. Welcome to the program.
Oh, you're welcome. Very pleased to be here.
Now, when you were a child, you write about this idea you had of Nazis, mostly from movies. They were tall and blonde and sort of icy. And your grandfather didn't fit that image at all. I mean, in that respect, he was not the perfect Nazi.
No, it's interesting. I had such a clear picture in my head, as anyone did growing up in the 60s and 70s, of what constituted the archetypal Nazi. And the one thing that was true of them all was you could spot them a mile away. There was very little subtlety in the way that they were depicted. Now, my German grandfather, certainly at the level of physique, didn't match the Nazi Party ideal, although, as was ironically spotted even at the time, very few senior Nazis did. However, it was in retrospect, when I did discover what his career up to the war had included, that I realised that even if physically there weren't many clues about his affiliation to the Nazi Party, then psychologically there certainly were. And alongside being devastated by my discovery, I was also dumbstruck at how stupid I'd clearly been, how unobservant I'd been all those years in his company.
You describe growing up, you would see your grandfather, you would go to Germany, he would come to Scotland to visit you. Your mother emigrated to the UK in the late 50s and met your father there. You describe how the family was pretty secretive about your grandfather's past, but you always had some suspicions. What eventually tipped you off?
It's interesting. I've interrogated myself about this a lot through the course of writing this book, which was how, on the one hand, you can smell a rat. There was an aura of forbidden knowledge that he exuded. He carried it around with him. He had a swagger to him. You know, he enjoyed having the last word in an argument. And even as a child, I could do the math. I could work out, well, what age was this man when all of that Nazi stuff was happening? So a little bit of deduction would tell you, here is someone who has something to answer for. However, alongside that, the product of a process I'm still not quite sure of, I never made the jump to, well, he must clearly have been a Nazi. I was in my mid to late 20s before I finally added up all of the facts and all the clues that were at my disposal and thought, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. I'm too old to be fobbed off with the idea that he was somehow merely a passenger in all of this. But it was only after he died in 1992 at the age of 85 that I finally drew from my mother the fatal admission, the two sibilant syllables, he was in the SS. It was a very difficult conversation, and I prized it out of her, and I suspect one of the reasons why she finally divulged it was she was free of the burden of him. He died. He wasn't there anymore. And I think some of the hold he held over her had loosened.
So what were you able to find out about your grandfather by looking through these old records and documents?
I discovered that he joined the Nazi Party at an astonishingly early age, barely 18, and that not just joining the party, he'd also become a stormtrooper, one of the guys in the brown shirts whose job it was to march up and down the streets of Berlin, rounding up, intimidating and beating up communists. But if that wasn't enough, he also had a huge job running the Nazi dental administration of Berlin. And all of this culminating in 1937 with his move from the SA, the Sturmabteilung, the Brandschutz, into the dreaded security police of the SS. And not just the SS, but a department within the SS called the SD, and that was the elite within the elite, the Sicherheitsdienst, the security service, who were the SS's, if you like, the think tank of the Holocaust is what they ended up becoming, in which capacity he worked right up to the bitterest end of the war, finally taking off his uniform a week after Germany's full capitulation.
He was a dentist. That was his profession. And eventually, you describe how he sort of became the overseer as part of the SS in the mid to late 30s of all the dentists in Berlin, particularly making sure that there were no non-Aryan dentists working in the city.
Yes, he had a Nazi career, and I use that word very self-consciously, that you know, he wasn't just a psychopathic sadist who fetched up in the black uniform of the SS in order to torture people. As a professional dentist, he had just as much to contribute to the Nazi state as he did with his party card or his brown shirt uniform. And in a sense, that was almost more terrifying, that the questions that the Nazis started asking, what is a healthy body politic, who deserves access to health, who damages the health of the wider nation, all of those biological questions that were at the heart of how the Nazis defined themselves as a racial state, suddenly doctors and dentists were in the front line of Nazi policy at its most terrifying.
Your grandfather was never punished for any of his activities during the war. Was he ever repentant? Did he ever express any regrets for what he did or what he was part of during the war?
Appallingly, no. He was, in his temperament and in his manner, utterly unrepentant, to the best of my knowledge, his entire life. It's not that he would try and persuade you that Hitler was a great man and that the Third Reich was misunderstood. It was never as literal as that. There was just about him a sort of steely-eyed self-satisfaction that you knew, well, I certainly in retrospect could work out, derived from the fact that, yes, they'd lost the war, but they'd rolled those dice. It had been a gamble worth taking, and they'd got pretty bloody close. And I'm pretty convinced he went to his grave extremely unrepentant.
Is your book, Martin Davidson, in a sense a kind of a posthumous reckoning, a kind of a sentence in absentia?
It's a really, really interesting way of putting it. And it was only after I'd written it that I realized that's exactly right. The motivation for writing it was, in part, to satisfy my curiosity, but it was also to address a sense that I worried and I was distressed by the extent. I think he was unaccountable, and I think he knew he'd felt he'd got away with it. And posthumously, my book is an attempt to redress that, absolutely.
That's Martin Davidson. His new book is called The Perfect Nazi, Uncovering My Grandfather's Secret Past. Martin Davidson, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.